this happened during the winter holidays, when I was in junior high. A lot of snow had fallen, so a friend and I made a massive snow hut. It was about 2 meters high and 2 meters wide, and we poured water on it after we built it, so it froze solid. 3 days later, I entered the snow hut at about 8 a.m. and was lazing about when, suddenly, the entire thing collapsed. It was huge, so I was completely buried in snow. I tried to push it off, but I couldn't. A few seconds later, someone started kicking it from the outside. My skin was on fire, and the pressure of the snow pushing down on me hurt like crazy. It was so heavy that the weight of it pushing down on me caused me to wet myself. "Ah, I'm gonna die," I thought. About a minute later, I was in so much pain that I couldn't tell what was what anymore. And then, the kicking outside stopped. At the same time, a white light appeared, and I heard someone screaming, "What happened?" I was glad the snow had caved in during the morning, because my father was on his way to work when he noticed it. "Something was kicking the snow in. I thought I was going to die," I said. "There was something filthy and black on top of the snow," my father replied. He alerted the police, just in case, but according to him, the thing was just standing there. They checked the remains of the hut after they got me out and discovered bare footprints left in the snow. Hey guys, I'm your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to another episode of Koobana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. In case you're not a member of the Koobana newsletter, or you don't follow me on Twitter, then you might not know that Koobana Volume 6 comes out today. You can head over to Amazon right now and pick up our biggest volume to date. If you've read any of the previous volumes, then you already know what to expect. So, if you're after even more Koobana, head over and check it out right now. A massive thank you to everyone for your support so far. It's because of you that I can continue making this show. Thank you! I'd also like to give a shout out before we start today to a new podcast on supernatural stories and creatures from the Philippines called the Tubby Tubby Podcast. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. It just started, and I'm a big fan of any type of folklore from other countries, so if you're interested in learning about another place, I highly recommend checking it out. I personally greatly enjoyed the first few episodes. Now, on this week's episode, we're going to be looking at terrifying tales from Japanese winter. Summer is the traditional time of horror in Japan, but that doesn't mean that winter is bereft of the terrifying. There's plenty of evil lurking in the snow, as this week's stories will attest to. First up, we're heading up the mountains for a terrifying tale that serves as a warning to the curious. What lengths would you go to uncover a mystery? After all, perhaps some things are better left unknown. Find out what happens in Snowy Mountain Lodge Killings. This is the story of a survivor from a real-life incident, of a survivor who was locked up in a psychiatric hospital. Whether you believe it's true or just the ramblings of a madman is up to you. But it was something that really happened. And if you look for something called the Dai Setsuzan Lodge Killings in old Hokkaido newspapers, you'll find it. Let me begin by stating that there's no doubt that this man was a survivor of that incident. It all began when this man, this survivor, entered an old bookstore in a certain park in Sapporo City. Unfortunately, that bookstore no longer exists. But this man, he grabbed a book from the shelves of this bookstore, and an old notebook fell out. Wondering what it was, he opened it. "It's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming." It continued. "Help me, help 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 me." The note was filled from start to finish with those words. Unnerved, the man took the notebook to the store owner. "I found this, but what exactly is it?" he asked. "Ah," the man exclaimed, "it's nothing. It's not for sale." He then snatched it back. The man returned home, but he couldn't get the notebook and its contents out of his head. What on earth was it? And was the person who wrote in the book still alive? It bothered him so much that the next day, he went back to the old bookstore. He asked the store owner once again, but he wouldn't tell him anything. But this just made him want to know even more. So every day for the next week, he returned to the store and pestered the man for information. The store owner, naturally annoyed, finally gave in. "Do you really want to know about this notebook that bad? If so, then you should spend the night of August 23rd at the lodge on the fifth station of Dai Setsuzan. But don't come whining to me if you regret it." Having heard this much, there was no way the man could stop now. He invited four friends, two men and two women, and on August 23rd that year, hiked the mountain with his sights set on the lodge. Nothing especially strange happened on the way up. They reached the lodge with ease, and when they got there, the two women told them that they would prepare some tea for everyone. The men went up to the second floor and set about putting away their stuff for the night. The man who had organized it all sat by the window and stared at the scenery outside. 5 minutes later, there was a voice at the door. "Hey, open up. We've brought the tea." It was one of the women from downstairs. Her hands were full, so she couldn't open the door. The man nearest the door opened it. But, as he did, suddenly, his head hit the floor. Something wasn't right. The head at the door had long hair and a woman's face. No, to put it more correctly, a woman's severed head had been placed on top of a man's headless body. Blood poured from the neck. The body appeared to be holding something, but the woman's eyes glared at them with intense hatred. Without saying a word, the thing stepped into the room and chopped off the head of the man unpacking. The man sitting by the window immediately jumped out. He survived and ran for the mountain trail, where he happened upon a hiker just passing by.
"My friends were just attacked by somebody who cut their heads off."
The hiker didn't appear to believe him, but they rushed back to the lodge together and were greeted by a horrifying sight. As they stepped inside, both women were dead, their heads cut off.
"This is terrible."
They quickly called the police. The man who had jumped out the window had sprained his ankle whilst doing so, so he was taken to the hospital. According to the police who investigated the scene, the object used to cut the heads off the four victims was so sharp that there was relatively little bleeding. They had no idea what could have done such a thing. Even more strangely, they couldn't find one of the victims' heads. The case ended up going unsolved. The man who survived lay trembling in his hospital bed. Then, when the nurse arrived to change his IV... "Huh? Who's that? Come in." But the door didn't open. Instead, the nurse heard a voice. I'm the patient's mother. I brought his things. If you don't mind, could you open the door for me? It was the man's mother. But his mother was in Tokyo, visiting his father, who was working away from home. They were in Hokkaido. There was no way his mother could have arrived so quickly. And who had contacted her in the first place? The man quickly realized something. Okay, I'm coming now, the nurse answered.
No, don't open the door,
he screamed. But he was too late. The man realized that, whoever the killer was, they couldn't open doors by themselves. They could also imitate any voice. They were able to make excuses to get others to open the door. And finally, they were able to chase anyone who escaped their grasp. The man passed out on the bed, surrounded by the closed partition curtain, which appeared to have saved him. But ever since that day, he could no longer go anywhere that had doors. Even now, he's still in a psychiatric hospital, in a lattice enclosure, writing in notebooks. Just like the notebook he found in that old bookstore. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. When I first heard this story, I thought that I too might be visited by that thing. But it couldn't be true, I thought. Still, after I told two of my friends this same story, suddenly the doorbell rang. It was 5 a.m. I nervously approached it. Hey, it's me, Yuji. Open up. It was my friend who was working in Tokyo. We all panicked and slowly unlocked the door. It's open, we said. I brought you guys souvenirs, so I've got no hands. Can you open it for me? He said. Everyone grew frightened, but one of my friends thought quickly and opened the back door. Yuji, looks like the door's broken, he said. But the back door's open, so you can come in through there. Thinking about it now, I don't know what he was thinking. Because if it was that thing, and it came in, what were we supposed to do? But at the time, I couldn't think straight. It didn't come through the back door anyway. We huddled under the blankets all morning, and then at 10 o'clock, we gave Yuji a call. Huh? I'm in Tokyo right now. Why? He said. A chill ran down my spine. Even now, I still don't really believe it, but I always make sure to never open the door for anyone now, no matter what. You've no doubt heard of Sugisawa Village. I did an entire Toshiden episode on it, and people's efforts to find it. Well, the pair in this next story might just have stumbled across it accidentally, but they quickly wished that they hadn't. Find out why in Sign in the Mountains. I can't tell you the exact details of the places I'm going to talk about now, but it's a rather famous mountain in the northeast of Japan. Those who know the area should know what I'm talking about rather quickly. The story I'm about to tell you is about a road that only the locals use. A road that leads to a certain mountain road. It was nearing the end of autumn while I was in high school. One of my childhood friends had already graduated, and he had a car, so we often hung out. On this day, he didn't have any work, so he came to pick me up after school and suggested we go for a drive. We only passed one car on the way through the mountains. There weren't any streetlights, But there was a back way that would take us through to the town on the other side of the mountain much quicker than the normal way. My friend's sedan was a little large for the road, however, and most of it was unpaved, so the speed he drove across it caused the car to wiggle side to side as we drove up the steep mountainside. After climbing for about 30 minutes, the road turned to sleet. My friend didn't have his snow tires on yet, so the car slipped all over the place. "We're never going to get through this. Let's go back," I said. But to the left of us was a steep cliff, meaning he'd have to reverse the whole way back. It would have been far too dangerous, so we had to keep going. "There should be a space up ahead to let other cars pass, so if we can make it there, we should be able to turn around and go back," my friend said. We couldn't just wade up on the dark mountain alone without any phone service, so we kept on climbing, the car slipping the whole way. As we climbed, the snow on the ground grew heavier, about 10 centimeters deep. All we could rely on was the car lights, and seeing bear tracks in the snow made me even more deathly afraid. It suddenly hit me that if we didn't hurry up, we'd be in another sort of trouble, and fast. A little further up, I saw an old wooden sign to the right of us. It was covered in snow, but as we passed it, I saw some letters written on it in red. "Sugisawa, 2K." "Huh? There's a village on this road," I thought. But I was so focused on us finding a place to turn around that I didn't think much more of it. Then, finally, we arrived at an open area, but that was where the road ended. In front of us stood a rather large, old, tea-coloured shrine gate. With no road going forward, all we could do was turn around, but I noticed some stairs behind the old shrine gate. The area around them was foggy, but at the top of the stairs, I saw something swaying in the fog that looked human in shape, but even whiter than the fog. "Did you see that?" I asked. "Oi, stop looking," my friend said. It was coming down the stairs towards us. We panicked and fell silent. We turned the car around and, as we went back down the road, the snow and that sign I'd seen were gone, like they'd never been there at all. My friend and I went back the next summer, and we were able to pass through without any problems. We weren't able to find our way back to that shrine gate. Even now, I wonder what would have happened if we got out of the car that time to check what was beyond that shrine gate. Driving in winter can be dangerous. Where I lived, the roads often froze over, and if you didn't have chains on your tires, well, good luck getting anywhere without crashing. The man in this next story takes the train to work, but an accident on the way there changes his and his family's lives forever. Find out why in Car Accident. This is a story about the old guy who used to live next to us quite a while ago. He was heading towards the station, as he always did, to get to work. It was a cold day, and the roads were covered in ice. They were so slippery that he fell and landed hard on his backside. It hurt so bad that he sat there for a moment, but then he heard a massive bang nearby, like something had crashed. He quickly got up and saw that a car had slipped on the ice and driven into a vending machine. The old guy bought coffee and cigarettes from that vending machine every morning. If he hadn't slipped, he would have been standing there when the car hit it. Thankfully, the driver got away with only light injuries as well. The pain of his fall was so bad, however, that he didn't think he'd be able to work, so he called in. It was a Friday, so they told him to take it easy over the weekend, and he returned home to rest. By the next day, he was fine, and he loved to chat, so he came over to our house and told us all about the accident before going home. But then, the next day, he suddenly fainted and then passed away. He'd hit his head when he fell, and apparently had a brain hemorrhage. His wife couldn't believe what had happened, but the words she said next stuck with me forever. If he'd been hit by that car, then he would have been taken to the hospital, and he probably would have survived. I lived rather close to a popular mountain for skiing in Japan, and being an Australian from a tropical area, I had never been skiing before in my life. I tried snowboarding the first winter I was there, and let's just say it was an eye-opening experience. A lot of these ski resorts have lodgings for visitors to spend the night, and some of them can be a little worse for wear. The narrator of this next story has seen his fair share over the years and shares one particularly odd story his parents experienced shortly before he was born. Find out what happens in Ski Resort. My parents love winter sports, so ever since I was young, I often joined them on skiing trips. I have lots of memories of the fun trips we took together. But just this one time, there was something unfamiliar and terrifying that happened. It took place one night at the lodge. Most ski resorts have one or two lodgings. Plenty of people stay overnight when they go skiing, so it makes sense that they'd have some. But it's not that strange for there to be lodgings on the very edge of the resorts either. So, when I was young, these old lodgings seemed both creepy and terrifying. It's a little embarrassing to say out loud, but whenever I needed to go to the toilet, someone had to go with me. When we were talking about this long after I'd grown up, my parents told me the following story. It happened about 30 years ago, when my parents were still newly married. They often visited ski resorts all around the country and spent the night. They greatly enjoyed themselves, but this happened at one resort in particular, one that I often visited with them as well. At the time, the resort only had a single old lodging, and so, because they had no other choice, my parents spent the night there. The walls were painted pink, and it was rather garish. It wasn't really what you would imagine a horror hotel to be, but it was the only lodging deep in the mountains, so it had a rather lonely atmosphere to it. My parents used the hot springs and then went out for all you could eat after. They returned to their room for drinks and then fell asleep late that night. That night, at 2 a.m., my mother woke up and needed to go to the toilet. Apparently, my father was fast asleep and snoring. She had perhaps drunk a little too much, so after she was finally done in the toilet, she returned to the room, but my father was gone. The light in the men's toilets was on when she passed, so she thought he'd also gone to use them and climbed back into bed. She was lying on her back dozing when a few minutes later she heard the door open and footsteps come inside. She thought it was my dad returning from the toilet. But the footsteps didn't approach his side of the bed, but rather hers. She thought it was strange, but she didn't move. The footsteps stopped by her side of the bed. She went to ask what was wrong, but then whoever it was fell on top of her. She was, of course, surprised. She thought it was my dad and that he was playing around, so she said jokingly, "Hey, quit it." She squirmed beneath him, but then, as she looked to the side, she noticed something that took her breath away. My dad was in bed, snoring. For a moment, she couldn't think, and it was like all the blood drained from her body. She screamed and tried to push the person off her, but whoever it was, they were already gone. She quickly woke my father up and told him what had just happened. He hadn't noticed anything, and then told her something even more shocking. He hadn't woken up once that night, let alone gotten out of bed. My mother claimed that when she got back from the toilet, however, my father was 100% not in the bed. That lodging is still in business, and I've stayed there several times myself. It's just a regular lodging, with nothing special about it. But if I had to say something about it, it would be that the halls are oddly cool, even during summer. Even now, my mother isn't sure whether the thing that fell on her in bed was human or not. One of my strongest memories of winter in Japan, and I have no idea why it is riding down the middle of the street one snowy December night to get to the second-hand store. This particular store was open until 1 or 2 in the morning, and it sold old video games, toys, DVDs and such. And the fact that it was open so late was just mind-blowing to me. There were no cars on the road. It was freezing. It was snowing. And I remember riding down the middle of this main road with nobody around and the sporadic streetlights highlighting the rapidly piling and untouched snow. I'm Australian, so I'd never seen snow before Japan. And this road that was so busy during the day was suddenly empty, entirely devoid of life. And the goddamn video store was open after midnight. It was amazing. I don't even remember what I bought, if anything, but to this day, I still clearly remember that ride down the empty street. The guys in this next story are in a somewhat similar situation. A group of colleagues are on their way to a ski resort late at night, and they decide to take the scenic route to get there. They quickly regret that decision, however, when they see something they shouldn't on the empty, snowy road there. Find out what happens in Late Night Snowy Road. This happened 3 years ago. I worked for an interior design company, and when we were free, I often went on skiing trips with my boss, who was rather young, and 2 other colleagues. Our company was located on the outskirts of Nagoya, and if you drive north up National Highway 19, there was a ski resort only a short distance away, so we went there often. We'd always leave around midnight, arrive at the resort around 3 or 4 a.m., and then after a quick sleep, hit the slopes. On this particular day, we left work around midnight, as always, and drove north up National Highway 19. After we passed Nakatsugawa and Toki, the road got smaller, and the only vehicles we passed were trucks and other skiers. My boss drove, and I sat in the passenger's seat. My colleagues, K and Y, sat in the back. We were enjoying ourselves when suddenly the boss said, "Let's look for a back way in." I loved things like hidden paths, mysteries, that sort of stuff, so I was all for it. We took a mountain road leading off the highway. Thinking about it now, it was strange that the boss suddenly suggested such a thing. If we'd just taken the same road we always had, then what was waiting for us wouldn't have happened. After driving down the mountain road for a while, we found another road. Nobody had any arguments, so we went down it. We drove down it for about 5 minutes. It looked like any regular countryside road. It was paved, but on either side it was surrounded by rice fields, with dim streetlights here and there. Then, as we were talking about finally going back, it happened. A woman in a white dress, holding an umbrella, stood beneath one of the streetlights. "What's she doing out there at this time of night?" I thought, and turned to look at the car's clock. It was already past 2 a.m. The car was driving about 50 or 60 kilometers per hour. It was dark, and I was kinda tired, so I figured that maybe I was just seeing things. We drove for another 5 minutes, and as we were approaching the road to turn back, once again I saw the woman in the white dress holding an umbrella beneath the streetlights. Her hair was cut short in a bob, and her pale face looked right at us. She seemed to be floating beneath the harsh lights. I nervously turned to look at the boss as he was driving. He then turned to look at me. "Did you see her?" "Yes. To tell you the truth, I saw her before as well." "Me too." "This is no good, huh?" "Honestly, I'm scared." I turned to look at the two in the back, and they were frowning. We debated whether we should turn back, but in the end decided to keep going just a little further. We drove a little faster than usual, and not even another minute had passed before we saw the woman in the white dress again. I was so scared that I couldn't say anything. The boss gripped the steering wheel tightly as he drove. Next time, we saw her standing between the lights, then beneath them, and then... Finally, we realized that it wasn't just one, but countless white women in dresses, all standing along the side of the road. Our last story for this week features two mountain surveyors who head up a snowy mountain for some work. Things proceed well, until one of them notices something he perhaps shouldn't have in the surveillance telescope. Something that seems to be following them around the mountain. Something that will soon make them regret not leaving sooner. Find out what happens in Mountain Surveying. Last month, A and I went mountain surveying. We usually did this with three people, but the other person who was supposed to come got sick with the flu, and nobody else was free. So just the two of us went. But still, I was worried. So when one of the locals tagged along to show us the borders, I asked him if he'd mind helping out for a bit. He said he would if we paid him, so the three of us went up the mountain together. It had snowed heavily the day before, so the mountain was pure white. We could easily see the surveying poles, however, so the measurements went unexpectedly well. Over the course of the morning, we measured all the way up to the ridge, and then the other guy's phone rang. After he was done speaking to the person on the other end, he hung up and said that something had suddenly come up, so he had to go. We still had a little left to measure, but he told us that if we followed the nearby path, we'd get to where we needed to go. It wasn't like we could stop him, so the guy left, and A and I continued on alone. Not long after he left, the sky clouded over and the weather took a turn for the worse. If it started to snow, that would make our job all the more difficult, so we quickly picked up the pace. At our company, we used a tool called a pocket compass when surveying in the mountains. A small telescope was attached to the top of the compass, and if we pointed it a certain way, it would tell us the direction as well as the angle it was facing. It was light, durable, and easy to use, so it was an indispensable part of our job. I placed the compass horizontally and turned the telescope to face A, who was standing with the surveying pole. I could see the snow-covered ground and the trees covered in snow, but I couldn't see A with the pole. I moved the telescope slightly and, for a moment, I saw a head with long hair, so I shifted the focus a little to better find the pole. Huh? As it focused, I realized something strange. We wore helmets when surveying, but for some reason, A had taken his off and was facing the other way. But not only that, A had brown hair, but the person I was looking at through the telescope had black hair. That's odd. I looked up from the telescope, and A was standing up on the mountain, his helmet on, and looking at me. Immediately behind him, however, stood another figure. I looked through the telescope again, adjusting it slightly. It was a woman. She seemed to be leaning against a tree, facing the other way. She wore white clothes with black hair reaching her shoulders. What on earth is a woman doing up here? I thought. I shivered, unable to turn away from the telescope. Hey! A screamed at me, as though taking that as a sign. The woman then disappeared into the trees. What are you doing? Hurry up already! A's voice brought me back to my senses. I read the compass and wrote the measurements down in my book, and then jogged up to where he was. There was a woman standing behind you just now. Didn't you notice her? I said. Quit saying stuff like that, man. He laughed, but when he saw I was serious, his expression hardened. Wait, seriously? I had no idea. We searched the trees for the woman, but there was no sign of her in the snow. You sure she wasn't a hiker? No, she didn't look like one at all. Then I realized something. That woman didn't have any bags or luggage with her, and she was wearing short sleeves on a snowy mountain. She might be dangerous. Shit, A said, trembling. She could be crazy or something. I was just as terrified and really didn't want to stick around any longer. It was also starting to get dark, so we took that as our chance to leave. Let's quickly finish this up and go back down. She could be dangerous. We quickly set about finishing what was left of our work. The weather quickly took another turn for the worse, and before we knew it, we were in the middle of a blizzard. I could barely see A holding the pole, and the snow was beginning to pile on thick. We could barely see the mountain paths anymore either. Not to mention our phones were out of range. I started to panic. I wanted to get down the mountain as soon as possible. I quickly mounted the compass. I didn't bother making sure it was straight and turned the telescope in A's direction. That woman was standing behind him again. This time she was facing us, but there was so much snow that I couldn't see her face. I couldn't tell if A had noticed her or not, but he was standing completely still. "Hey!" I called out, but A didn't move. But it looked like the woman behind him did. In haste, I turned the telescope to look at her again and nervously looked through it. The woman's eyes were closed, and she gripped A's hair from behind, pressing her mouth close to his ear. She appeared to be whispering something. A showed no signs of trying to escape. He just stood frozen on the spot. The woman continued whispering in his ear. I grew scared, trembling on the spot and unable to move. Finally, the woman stepped away from A and disappeared into the snow. Then A turned to follow her. "Hey, A, what are you doing? Get back here. Hey, come back." But A ignored me and followed the woman into the snow. "You'll get lost. Hey!" But he wasn't the only one in trouble. If I followed, I would be too. All I wanted to do was get as far away from there as possible. The blizzard had turned everything around me white. Still, I made my way over to A. "A! A! Get it together, man! You'll die out there!" Then A turned to look at me. His vacant eyes looked in different directions. He muttered sounds that made no sense. His mouth was open so wide that I'd never seen anything like it before. Like his chin reached all the way down to his chest. His tongue lolled forward, and blood poured from the edges of his mouth, which had been torn open. His entire jaw had been ripped off. Then he came running towards me. That was it. I couldn't do it anymore. I left everything behind and ran down the mountain. When I got back to the car, I drove to an area where I could get phone reception and quickly called both our company and the police. The search and rescue team came out to search the mountain and listen to my story. I was worried about how to explain that woman at first, but eventually I just told them exactly what I'd seen. The police looked indifferent as they took notes, but when I mentioned that the woman had whispered something to A, they started asking me questions again. 2 days later, they found a corpse. A body, wearing white clothes, with black hair. The details matched the woman I'd seen. The police called me out and made me explain everything once again. This time, they asked me all sorts of questions about the body as well. They apparently quickly discovered who it was. The previous summer, a woman had gone missing from a town several kilometers away. But as for why she was on that mountain, they had no idea. I honestly didn't care why. I just wanted to forget about everything that had happened. But there was still one thing that bothered me. Apparently, when they found the woman's dead body, both of her eyes had been severely damaged. I thought that maybe A had done it, but the police said the injuries had been there for a while. She would have been completely blind, the police officer said. In the end, they never found A. I think his family hopes that he's still alive somewhere. But when I remember what happened that day, honestly, I hope that I never run into him again. But recently I've had a bad feeling about things. So last week, I went to the hairdresser and cut all my hair off. If you're looking for even more Japanese horror to tide you over until the next episode, don't forget to check out the Kawabana YouTube channel at youtube.com/kawabanajapan. We're posting a bunch of winter and Christmas-themed horror this month, from old Super Famicom games, modern indie games, and much more. So go check it out. You can also help support us and get even more bonus episodes at the Coabana Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/TaraA Devlin for close to 40 bonus episodes you can start listening to right now, as well as instant access to last month's 31 Days of Coabana Scary School Stories special. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you again next time for even more Coabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Want even more scary stories? Head over to coabana.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to coabana.net now.